Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, October 3rd, 2021. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you all had a great week. I'm going to go through the topics today, then we'll jump into it. So, programming note, we will not be doing a Being the Elite recap this week. The reason being, it was mainly a vlog this week, just vlog footage. But it was really, really good. I'd highly recommend checking it out, especially for those of you who are fans of AEW, people who follow Being the Elite. There was a really good Christopher Daniels segment at the beginning of the show that I highly recommend checking out. And there was some really cool footage that Brandon Cutler got, you know, behind the scenes during AEW Grand Slam and then out by the ring during the Superclick match and stuff. So a lot of really cool footage, just not enough meat on the bones to do a full review this week. So, you know, if they're back to more of the storyline progression type stuff next week, we'll do a review of BTE then. But because of that, I've got two recommended shows for you to watch on independentwrestling.tv this week. So I'm going to highlight two shows from IWTV, and these are the topics for the rest of the show. We have results for MLW Fusion Alpha, as well as spoilers for MLW Fightland. So spoiler alert, I'm going to be giving you all the spoilers for what happened last night on Fightland, and the actual show is going to air on Thursday on Vice. I think right after Dark Side of the Ring. So we got results for Fusion, and we have spoilers for Fightland. We also have results for VXS, Violence X Suffering, Impact Wrestling, NXT UK, 205 Live, the National Wrestling Alliance, and Ring of Honor. So a lot to get to today. Before we get started, as always, like I mentioned, I have two recommended shows to watch on independentwrestling.tv. And you can use code FIGHTTALK over there, F-I-G-H-T. T-A-L-K, all is one word, no space. That helps me out a ton when y'all use that promo code. So once again, on independentwrestling.tv or IWTV.live, use code FIGHTTALK. The first show that I've chosen this week is New Texas Pro Wrestling's Elijah Wan. So the company, once again, is New Texas, and the show is called Elijah Wan, which is, of course, a reference to the Hall of Fame legend basketball player Akeem Elijah Wan, who was also, you know, very, very, very popular in Texas because of his basketball career. So these are the matches to expect. This happened in Houston, Texas on September the 25th, so last Saturday. We've got New Texas Pro Champion Brian Keith defending the title against Stallion Rogers, Corey O'Neill versus Gideon Vane versus Chris Carter in a three-way, AJ Gray versus Jerome Daniel Griffey. We have Rachel Rose versus Sky Blue, Mysterious Q versus Fuego del Sol, a Lone Star Championship match, champion Cole Radrick defending the title against Max Heights. We had Aaron Mercer versus Gino Medina. In the main event, the New Texas Pro / Ring of Honor Women's Champion, Roxy, defends her title against Killer Kelly. So a lot of great talent on the show. I'll highlight some right here. We had Brian Keith, like I mentioned, New Texas Pro Champion coming into the show. Huge fan of Brian Keith. For those of you who aren't, you know, unfamiliar with him, he's very popular in the Houston area especially, but, I mean, this guy, he's sponsored by Swisher House, which is awesome. He comes out to Tippin' on 4-4s, which is like the, like, Paul Wall, Mike Jones. Like, he's very, very Houston. Like, he comes out to Houston music. He, you know, smokes and represents for Swisher House. You know what I mean? Like, it's awesome. And the guy can go in the ring. Like, he hits heavy. I've seen some really, really good matches between himself and AJ Gray over the past year. And Brian Keith, he's like the man in Houston right now. If you were to ask me who's the number one most popular wrestler in Houston right now, I'd probably say Brian Keith. And his opponent, Stallion Rogers, of course, the former Kurt Stallion, who had his, you know, 6-month stint or whatever it was in 205 Live, a guy who I'm a huge fan of because I got to see, you know, his career for years prior to WWE. He was the first ever Southern Underground Pro Bone Storm champion, which is my favorite, you know, independent promotion out of Nashville, Tennessee. So I'm very familiar with seeing him live. I got to see him in Georgia, in Chattanooga, in Nashville. I got to see him in St. Louis. I got to see him all over the place. And it's great to see him back and rejuvenated. And I said it once, I'll say it, you know, probably 1,000 times. But all of the WWE releases over the past year or so, especially if you narrow it down to the people who were, like, you know, in that 205 Live bubble for most of their run, like, of course, Stallion Rogers, Alex Zane, August Gray, or Anthony Green, You got a lot of them. And even before that, let's see, who was I can't remember the order of all these releases because so many happened. Asher Hale, who, Anthony Henry. So there's a lot of really good talent there. And Stallion Rogers is one that I always talk about where I'm like, WWE's gonna really kick themselves for only giving him 6 months. I know he had some injuries during that time, but like Rogers, if and when he signs with AEW, which I think will happen sooner than later, especially because he's done stuff on AEW Dark recently, it'll take some time. It won't be like an overnight thing, but I think Stallion Rogers can honestly be a massive star for AEW. I'd say the same for Anthony Henry and for Alex Zane. We've already seen Anthony Green on Dynamite, more so in a squash match with Bear Country against who they wrestled this past week. I think Moxley, Kingston, and Darby. But Stallion Rogers is at that tippy top of the totem pole, as far as I'm concerned, with indie wrestlers. And yeah, he hasn't even. It's disappointing that his WWE run was so short, but I'm very excited to see what he does, on the indies again, and hopefully with AEW soon, because huge fan of his. Another name on here that y'all should really be paying attention to is Chris Carter. A lot of the people on the show, by the way, are becoming very well known in the Houston area. I see them in a lot of Houston-based shows, really all over Texas, but like Houston specifically. And a lot of these wrestlers were trained by Booker T, which, he's got basically the best school you can go to in Texas, in my opinion. So, Chris Carter, another one of those guys who just young, hungry, and innovative. I've been seeing a lot of really good stuff with him. He had a really good match against Jimmy Lloyd, like this was probably like 3 months or so ago already. But keep your eyes out on Chris Carter. He's somebody I think is going to really break out in the next year or so. AJ Gray on the show. I mean, I talk about him every week. He's probably the one guy right now, if you were to ask me, like, if you could only pick one guy from the indies right now to plug in on either Impact, AEW, or NXT. Well, NXT is probably out of the question now because they don't want wrestlers. They want, to mold their own wrestlers out of, athletes or whatever. But if you're looking at, even New Japan, AEW, wherever, Impact, AJ Gray would be probably the number one name on my list right now as far as people who aren't exposed to the mainstream TV, but could make a huge impact in any company right now. AJ Gray, I talk about him literally every week, so just go back to hear my thoughts on him. I think the world of AJ. I think he's an incredible performer. He has an incredible entrance. I mean, he's the total package, and he always gets over with all the crowds he works in front of. AJ is a guy who is the current Bone Storm champion in Nashville at SUP. The title I was just talking about, Stallion Rogers being the first champion. The current champion there is AJ Gray. And yeah, I've been a fan of his for years as well. And I hope he gets that big chance one day in front of like more fans, in front of more eyes on like a bigger stage. But even if he doesn't, I mean, he's already carved out a great career for himself in the indies, and that's only going to continue to get better. I mean, the guy is a star. Rachel Rose and Sky Blue, great match between two really, really talented females. I highly recommend checking this whole show out, obviously, but if you want to see kind of the future of women's wrestling, two of the names right there, Rachel Rose and Sky Blue. Mysterious Q, another huge standout wrestler of the Houston area, another guy who was trained by Booker T. He's honestly, I mean, he has the size, the look. Whether or not he uses the mask, because I've seen him unmasked as well wrestle. I could take or leave the mask gimmick with him. Like it's fine, but like he doesn't need it. He's got good size. He's really good in the ring. He's innovative as well. Gets over everywhere. And Fuego, his opponent, of course, we see on AEW. He is signed by All Elite Wrestling. Recently was in that big storyline and still probably is to a degree, where it kind of culminated with Sammy Guevara, his best friend, winning the TNT title and kind of avenging his losses and his beatdowns to Miro. So obviously, if you watch AEW, you know who Fuego de Sol is. The Lone Star Champion, Cole Radrick, one of my favorite wrestlers in the world. I talk about him often on the show as well. From bell to bell, he's probably one of, if not my favorite wrestlers in the world right now. I love his entrance. I just love how unassuming he is. I say it all the time. He's a guy you look at and just don't think much. And his hard work and the way he gets over. And he has a really innovative moveset as well. I've said that a lot about a lot of these wrestlers on the show, but it's true. A lot of them bring something totally different from the others in the ring and outside the ring. A lot of originality here. And Cole Radrick's got a sweet moveset, and he really goes 110% out there at all times. So, huge fan of Ratty Daddy. His opponent, Max Heights, very talented as well. This was a great matchup. And Max Heights, I think I've mainly seen kind of in the Texas area as well. We had Gino Medina on this show. Gino is a guy who could be a massive star in the mainstream. He's a great wrestler, and he has a great look. And the women love him. I mean, any girl that I've ever been around that's seen a Gino Medina match, they're always talking about him. You know, like, he's a guy who connects. He's one of those guys where, like, the guys think he's cool and the girls want to be with him. And that's, like, the ultimate kind of, that's, like, the best case scenario if you're a male wrestler, in my opinion, is if the guys want to be like you and the women want to be with you. That's the key, because you cover, like, such a wide percentage of the overall wrestling fan base. And on top of it, Medina's a damn good wrestler. You've seen a lot of good stuff from him in MLW, and he's a guy that, like, if he ever got a shot in any, you know, quote-unquote, like, upper-tier, you know, mainstream wrestling company, I think he'd kill it. I think he would be a great asset, really, anywhere right now. The guy's really... He checks, like, every box you would possibly want out of, you know, who do we want that's a little different but can get over in front of everybody. Boom. Gino Medina. And then the main event, Roxy, coming into the show as the new Texas Pro and Ring of Honor Women's Champion. Of course, she won that Ring of Honor Women's Championship through that tournament that we covered, you know, weekly here on the Weekender. And Roxy, super talented, just getting started, too. I got kind of tipped on her, you know, a little while back. I've got some good buddies who live in, you know, kind of the Houston area and go to these shows and have been going for a while. And one name that always, a few of the names that always come up, like when I have friends that go to these shows and they text me or DM me or whatever, they're always talking about Brian Keith, Mysterious Q, and Roxy. Those are like the three, and Chris Carter a lot too, well, lately. But those are the names that I'm always hearing from the Texas fans that I know. And Cole Radrick's becoming more and more of kind of a Texas guy, which is pretty cool. I believe he's from Indiana, but he wrestles all over the place. And he's been doing great stuff in GCW. A lot of these wrestlers have done great stuff in GCW too, like obviously AJ Gray, Cole Radrick, so on and so forth. But Roxy, she's really one of the main women that I think is going to be really like the future of women's wrestling. She does a great job in Ring of Honor. And that's just the tip of the iceberg for her, in my opinion. And I can say the same for Killer Kelly. I mean, Killer Kelly's super talented as well. Another woman who, you know, you could take Roxy, Killer Kelly, Rachel Rose, and Sky Blue. And I know some of them are getting their chances, you know, in Ring of Honor. But, man, any of them would be a huge asset to Impact Wrestling or AEW as well. Or WWE, for that matter. But I'm kind of excluding the WWE right now from any, like, you know, any hope that any wrestler that I like is going to head there, because once again, like, they're not, as a whole other conversation for another podcast, but they're not interested in hiring wrestlers at this point. They're so any like established professional wrestler out on the indies right now, I think their main option right now is, you know, there are two options: or stay on the indies and become like self-sustained through your indie career, which is totally possible and a lot of people are doing right now, or aspire to eventually get signed by AEW, maybe New Japan still for a lot of them. And then, of course, you have other options that are great, like MLW that'll put you on like a one-year deal, you know, so you don't get like locked in too long, but you can, you know, extend or re-sign if things are going well and all that. So you have a lot of really great options right now. And Roxy with Ring of Honor is killing it, and she's killing it on the indies in the Houston area as well. So huge shout out to Roxy, and shout out to Killer Kelly as well. I mean, Killer Kelly, very, very talented. So a lot of great women on this show, a lot of great performers in general on this show. So check it out. Once again, one of my recommended show this week is New Texas Pro Wrestling's Elijah Wan. You can catch it right now on independentwrestling.tv. And the other show that I've chosen, which is a completely different type of show, but a show that I love, and I talk about a lot whenever they have them, we have ICW No Holds Barred The Pit 4. So ICW actually ran three shows this weekend. They had the ICW Deathmatch Circus. That was on October 1st. So that was Friday. Was it Friday, October 1st? Let me just double check. Yeah, Friday, October 1st. In kind of like, that's right. They did the Deathmatch Circus at like early evening. And then there was nothing because AEW Rampage ran. And then right after that was ICW No Holds Barred The Pit 4. And then the next day, which was yesterday at the time of this recording on Saturday, they were supposed to do another like regular show, or I say regular show, a show with a ring. But for whatever reason, I didn't look into it or ask, but I saw they wound up changing it last minute to The Pit 5. So these pit shows are great, though. I'm a huge fan. They're totally different. Viewer discretion advised. You know, I'd say half of this is like hard hitting, just like kind of shoot style MMA mixed in with some hardcore wrestling. And some of it is just straight up deathmatch wrestling. All of which I find, you know, appealing at this point. I love just the variety, and I've gotten so numb to some of these things. Like the first time I saw somebody take a gusset plate or gusset plate, however you pronounce it. The first time I saw that, you know, a while back, I was like almost threw up, right? I was like, oh my God, this is too much. And now it's like, I'm just so used to seeing it. But that's kind of part of the problem is, you know, for these deathmatch wrestlers, they have to, like, once the shock value kind of disappears for certain things, then they have to, like, up the ante and think of something even crazier to do. And I never want them to come to the point where, like, you know, it gets too dangerous because, you know, I don't want anyone getting, like, actually, like, really hurt or, like, killed out there, God forbid. But, like, you know, it's one of those things where it's, like, first you see someone, you know, take a gusset to the arm, then you see them take it to the head, then the next thing you know, they're headbutting them into each other's heads, and then they've got, you know, meat skewers hanging out of their heads at the same time, and they're covered in thumbtacks, and their feet then start getting covered in thumbtacks, and it just, you know, it just kind of, it just keeps evolving, but at the end of the day, that's what the audience wants. There is a bloodthirsty deathmatch fan base out there that craves this stuff, and these wrestlers give it to them. Now, that's to say, not every match was like an ultra-violent deathmatch-type scenario in this. There was a lot of, like, straight-up, you know, great MMA-type stuff. For instance, here's the card, and then I'll highlight some talent. So, this is ICW No Holds Barred, The Pit 4, and keep in mind, my favorite wrestling tournament of the last year was ICW's Pit Fighter tournament from the Collective weekend, or the Collective slash Independent Wrestling, or what do they call it? IWTV's Showcase of the Independents, that's what they called it. But they had a one-night tournament in the pit, and that was my favorite tournament of the entire year. If you're into any of this kind of stuff, I would highly recommend watching the Pit Fighter tournament, the one-night tournament from, you know, the Collective slash Showcase of the Indies weekend. Incredible tournament. Incredible. But these are the matches for the Pit 4. We had Aaron Orion versus Aaron Williams, Isaiah Bronner versus Justin Kyle, Tank versus Hoodfoot, The Carver versus Satyu Jin, Brandon Kirk versus Darren McCarty. In the main event, the ICW American Deathmatch champion, John Wayne Murdoch, against Tommy Vendetta. So, Aaron Orion and Aaron Williams was a pretty good mix of like hardcore wrestling and mixed martial arts. I'm a big fan of Aaron Williams in particular. I've been a fan of his for a while, but I feel like he's really putting it together and kind of hitting a new level right now. Isaiah Bronner and Justin Kyle was probably my favorite match of the show. Either that or Tank versus Hoodfoot. Two very different matches. I'm a huge fan of Justin Kyle. I tweet about him almost every time I see him wrestle. He really pays tribute to the axe murderer, Vanderlei Silva, for those of you who are, you know, longtime fans of mixed martial arts, especially if you're a fan of Pride Fighting Championship back in the day. Vanderlei Silva's entrance, Sandstorm, is just epic and legendary. Justin Kyle comes out to that song as a tribute to Vanderlei, and he's just a straight up, you know, he's basically an MMA fighter that, you know, the only thing with Justin Kyle that I want to see sometime soon, just because I haven't seen it, and I've talked about it on the show before, I've been watching him for years at this point, but Justin Kyle, he thrives in these kind of scenarios. Like, thrives. Like, he's probably my favorite overall performer when it comes to pit fighter type stuff. But I'd like to see what he can do in just, like, a straight-up pro wrestling match. And the reason I say that is because the guy has the size, the look, the intensity that he really... I mean, I know I'm saying, like, people probably won't head to the WWE, you know, because of their wrestling talent and whatnot. But Justin Kyle's the kind of guy with, like, the size and the look that the WWE, I think, would just bend over backwards for. I mean, this guy could be a massive star if he could even do a little bit of pro wrestling. He's great at the work shoot fights, but I just haven't seen enough of him as, like, a pro wrestler to make a real, like, a real judgment on where I think he's at, like, as far as for, like, if you were to go to, like, a mainstream company anytime soon. He just doesn't do a lot of pro wrestling, but he does incredible work in these shoot-style fight scenarios. So huge fan of Justin Kyle. And if you haven't seen him before, seek his stuff out, because, like I said, this guy's huge, and he moves like a... I mean, he moves like a smaller guy as far as, like, fast strikes, and, I mean, he's a real hybrid of, like, you know, just mixed martial arts, UWFI type fighter. Love it. And Isaiah Bronner, love him too. He's about as credible as it comes. You see that guy walk into the ring, he just looks like he's going to beat someone's ass. And him and Justin Kyle killed it. I mean, they beat each other up. Justin just got the, well, I shouldn't say, watch the match. No spoilers here. I want you to watch the show. But I'm a huge fan of Isaiah Bronner. And I think this might have been his first trip to the pit. I could be wrong. But they need to keep bringing him back. Like, I'd watch Bronner versus Kyle. Like, if they had a trilogy, I'd totally be down for it. I really enjoyed this match here. And then also, my possible match of the night, Tank versus Hoodfoot. Tank is a legend in Tennessee. Came out with the Reverend, as always. And he's a guy, I've talked about it before on this show. I attended Tank's retirement match, like, 4 or 5 years ago in Chattanooga. He wrestled Matt Riddle, and he lost the match, and that was his retirement. Obviously, years have passed. He's still wrestling. He did not, in fact, retire, as is the case for most wrestlers. But I'm glad, because Tank is just, he's just such a legend in Tennessee, and to see him in Pit Fighter, he's just a perfect fit for that, especially against a guy like Hoodfoot, who I'm a massive fan of. He's one of my brother's favorite wrestlers. You know, my brother, who's become an indie wrestling fan by default because he's around me so often. His two main guys are Dominic Guarini, who's currently injured. And since Guarini's out, his guy lately has been Hoodfoot. I'm a huge fan of Hoodfoot. He does great in the UWFI, you know, paradigm shows. Him and the Lost Boys, I mean, wherever they're at, whether, you know, whether it's Paradigm or they've done some stuff in SUP recently, and they're really all over the place. And Hoodfoot's been doing more deathmatch stuff lately too. And he's really, you know, kind of expanding his fan base because of the deathmatch wrestling lately. And Hoodfoot goes for it, man. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Hoodfoot. He could be another really big star. And he's another guy with, like, a totally different look, but so much credibility. The Carver and Satchi Jin are both completely insane. If you've seen either of these guys ever, you'll know what I mean. If you haven't, you're in for either something really enjoyable or something just completely disgusting, really depending on how you look at it. Satchi Jin, just by the way, looked like his back hadn't even healed since the last time he had a death match, because his back looked like it was still bleeding, like, heading into the match. Brandon Kirk, great heel, just absolutely great heel. You know, I haven't seen a ton of his work, but the work that I have seen, he's a heat magnet. And then the main event, you know, I'll shout out John Wayne Murdoch, who's probably, outside of like Nick Gage and Alex Colon and Drew Parker right now, I'd say John Wayne Murdoch, and depending on who you ask, he might be ahead of these guys. But, like, on my kind of deathmatch totem pole right now, I'd say number one, I'd probably have... Right now, I'd say probably Drew Parker. Right underneath that, I'd have Nick Gage. And then right underneath that, I'd have Alex Colon. And then right underneath that, I'd have John Wayne Murdoch. Those would be my top four. And they're totally interchangeable, depending on who you like better. But John Wayne Murdoch, I kind of consider the main deathmatch guy when it comes to IWTV. because Drew Parker kind of comes and goes from GCW, but he's the current ultra-violent champion for GCW. Nick Gage is, you know, the face of GCW, and Alex Colon is the guy who's, you know, won Tournament of Survival 3 times in a row and, you know, really established himself as probably the most dangerous deathmatch guy. Outside of maybe him and Nick Gage is debatable, because Gage is, you know, the god of that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, just ask MLJ on his you know, intros. But if you're looking at kind of purely on the independentwrestling.tv side, I definitely consider John Wayne Murdoch to be the number one deathmatch guy on the platform. So, so that's, you know, high praise. And he's a guy who just, he's very, very likable. He's one of these guys, like, you see him and you just get behind him. And whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, you wind up caring. And, yeah, huge shout out to John Wade Murdoch. Huge shout out to this show. Once again, it's ICW No Holds Barred, The Pit 4. It's available right now on independentwrestling.tv or IWTV.live. Use code FIGHTTALK when you sign up on the platform. Moving on, I'm going to give you some results for MLW Fusion Alpha, and then we're going to do spoilers for Fightland. I will give you a heads up before the spoilers, so you can skip them if you want to. But the latest episode of Fusion Alpha, we had Aramis versus Ares. The finish was a helicopter sit-out powerbomb by Aramis. I keep wanting to call him Aramis because there's a totally different wrestler called Aramis that I used to watch in Tennessee, so I'm sorry for the name, but Aramis, I think, is like the actual pronunciation. It was nice. It was, like I said, it's like a helicopter sit-out powerbomb. Don't know how else to really explain it, but this match ruled. Awesome match. Both these guys flew all over the place, just springboard to the outside and just putting their bodies on the line. Great stuff. After that, Alex Kane over Bud Heavy. Alex Kane had King Mo in his corner, which I love. I love the two of them together. I love King Mo kind of mentoring Alex Kane, and I'm a huge Alex Kane fan. Huge. I've been a fan of his for a while. Loved his work in SUP. Love his work in Action Wrestling out of Tyrone, Georgia. Alex Kane is one of the really real future stars of wrestling, in my opinion. The suplex assassin got the win with a ripcord Olympic slam, which I liked. I've never really seen that before. Although I do prefer Alex's his move that he uses on the indies. I believe he calls it the Mark of Kane, which is like a leg trap. It's like a leg draw, or it's like a leg trap, back body drop, bridging suplex. Once again, kind of hard to explain, but it looks really good when he hits it. And then the main event of the Fusion Alpha was Alex Hammerstone over Filthy Tom Lawler to retain the Openweight Championship, heading into his double title match against Fatu at Fightland. The finish came when he hit the Nightmare Pendulum for the 1-2-3. Which, for those of you who haven't seen the Nightmare Pendulum, it's a devastating-looking move that I used to see. I think Hirooki Goto is the first person I ever saw use it, but it's basically a vertical suplex, like, pickup, and then he drops forward into, like, a rock bottom. It looks totally brutal, but it's a risky move, because, like, your opponent can either land, like, flat back or, like, right on the back of their head or the top of their head, but Hammerstone always makes it look brutal. And I also want to mention in the Alex Kane match against Bud Heavy, Alex Kane pinned him with, you know, 1 foot, just kind of standing over him. So they're really establishing Alex Kane as, like, a real threat in MLW, like, right away. And then, of course, Hammerstone with the W, once again, heading into his double title fight against Fatu at Fightland. So speaking of Fightland, I don't have all the finishes, but I have the results. And spoiler alert. So if you don't want spoilers for MLW Fightland, I'd recommend probably fast-forwarding like 2 or 3 minutes here, but these are the results. So spoiler alert, results for MLW Fightland coming right now. These are courtesy of WrestleZone.com, but I'm reading them off of Fightful.com. So these are the results. We have Mads Kruger over Dr. Dax, Alex Kane over Warhorse. Opening round of the Opera Cup, the next 4 matches are all tournament opening rounds. We had Calvin Tankman over Matt Cross, Bobby Fish over Lee Moriarty, Davey Richards over Tom Lawler, and TJP over Alex Shelley. Non-tournament, going back into the show, we had Nicole Savoy over Holly Dead, I believe I saw Nicole Savoy was injured during the show, so I hope that she gets better soon. I think she was taken to the hospital. I also saw that TJP was injured, but I don't think it was nearly as serious. But thoughts out to TJP and Nicole Savoy. Hope they both have strong, speedy recoveries from what they're dealing with. We had an MLW Middleweight Championship match. New champion crowned, Tajiri, over Ares, Aramis, and Myron Reed. Myron Reed was the former champion. We have an Opera Cup semifinals match where Calvin Tankman defeats Alex Kane. The MLW Caribbean Championship on the line in a casket match. Mil Muertes retains the title over Filthy Tom Lawler. In a survival elimination match, we had EJ Anduka, Savio Vega, Richard Holiday, Warhorse, Zenshi, and the Blue Meanie over Quan, King Mo, Gina Medina, Kevin Koo, Casey Navarro, and the Beastman. We had another semifinals Opera Cup match where Davey Richards defeated Bobby Fish. And in the main event, title versus title, Alex Hammerstone defeats Jacob Fatu to become the MLW champion, and he already held the Openweight Championship, so he is now double champion. So some thoughts from this show, starting with that main event. I think that it would be very smart at this point to retire the Openweight Championship or, you know, combine it with the MLW title, just call it all the MLW Championship. Hammerstone, he was the right guy. You know, this was a long time coming. The story had built for like the last year leading up to this. I wish he wouldn't lean so much into like trying to be like Hulk Hogan, but the guy's got a great look and he gave me a great face at this company. Huge shout out to Jacob Fatu for that title run that he had. I mean, this guy's had the belt for like 2+ years, maybe longer, and he really carried that company on his back, especially, you know, during COVID and, you know, when MLW, like, not a lot of people were paying attention, or maybe, you know, in their lull periods where like they weren't really on YouTube, or they kind of were on YouTube, but like they were still looking for like TV distribution and all that stuff. So it's great. I mean, Jacob Fatu, it could be a massive star in any company. I would love to see him in AEW. I would absolutely love that. Some other thoughts from this show. But also, once again, shout out and huge congratulations to Alex Hammerstone. It totally deserved. He was the right choice. He was the one who had been groomed for a while for this moment. So let's see him, what he does. Take that ball and run with it. Some other thoughts. You know, Lee Moriarty, he lost to Bobby Fish on the show. To my understanding, you know, I spoke to Lee Moriarty the other week, and I think this was his last appearance with MLW, and it'll be all AEW going forward. I'm sure he'll still take indie bookings, as a lot of the AEW talents do, but no more TV matches outside of AEW for Lee Moriarty. And huge congratulations to Lee once again for getting that AEW contract. I'm such a big fan of Lee, not only as a wrestler, but as a human being. Some other stuff. I love that we've got Calvin Tankman versus Davey Richards for the finals of the Opera Cup. Those would probably be my two top picks to wrestle each other in the finals. So they gave me exactly what I wanted. I'm a huge mark for Calvin Tankman. He's another one of those guys I got to see live like 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it was. And he's gotten so much better since then. This guy really could be the face. I mean, honestly, at some point, I'd like to see Calvin Tankman dethrone Hammerstone. He's really the one person that comes to mind, outside of maybe Davey Richards, that I think, you know, I know Hammerstone just won the title, but kind of thinking in the future, don't know how, you know, down the line, or if they're going to give Hammerstone, you know, a really long title reign. No idea which direction this is going to go, especially if the Forbidden Door kicks open more, because Bobby Fish from MLW, of course, is going to be wrestling Sammy Guevara for the TNT title on AEW Dynamite this week. So if they really kick that door open, I want to see Fatu in MLW. I want to see Hammerstone in MLW. And I really want to see Calvin Tankman and Davey Richards in MLW as well. But yeah, huge fan of Tankman. Just, I mean, that's kind of where my head's at. If Tankman's going to be in MLW long-term, that's who I would have beat Hammerstone for the belt eventually. But a lot can happen between now and then. I mean, the landscape of wrestling is changing on a daily basis at this point. So, and also, shout out to Tajiri, one of my favorite wrestlers ever. I love Tajiri. Love him. And it's really, really cool to see kind of his resurgence in MLW. Like, obviously, you know, he's been wrestling in Japan for years. You know, of course, he had his ECW run, his WWE run, and all that stuff that everyone knows him for. He had that really brief stint in 205 Live. and then just kind of, for most people, feel like he's kind of disappeared. But he's been wrestling in Japan ever since then, and he still looks the same, like in the ring. Physically, he you know, when you look him in the face, he looks like he's aged a little bit because, you know, he's getting up there in age. But in the ring, he still does all the stuff you'd expect Tajiri to do. So, similar to kind of, you know, like Too Cold Scorpio. Like, both guys, obviously, they look older, but they both can do all their hits. You know what I mean? Like, you get, as long as they can keep doing the moves that the fans want to see, they can keep going out there and killing it. So, huge shout out to Tajiri. And yeah, that is MLW Fightland. That's going to actually air on Thursday night. Once again, I think it's after, right after Dark Side of the Ring on Vice. And last thing I'll say about the show, Court Bauer, anyone listening, y'all gotta figure out a way to make these shows live. It happened with the, like, whenever, I can't remember the name of the show, Battle Riot, that's what it was. It happened with Battle Riot a couple, you know, months ago, where, like, they did the show, but it didn't actually air for, like, 2 weeks, and by the time it did, you know, everyone knew it was going to happen because the spoilers were just, like, unavoidable. MLW, you're too big, you're too important right now. Like, you got to figure a way of putting these shows on live. And honestly, I know a lot of people that would have paid for this. Like, if you could have got something going with Fight TV or even, you know, some sort of, you know, subscription-based platform, IWTV, whatever it is. I know they have the deals with, I can't think of the company, but they do have, like, this TV obligation that usually lets them do stuff on YouTube, though. So it's like, you got to figure out a way to make these live going forward, especially for this show. It's honestly a travesty that fans weren't able to see. I mean, there was people who could go to the show live, but that's such a small percentage of the overall fan base for MLW. Like, every MLW fan should have had the opportunity to watch Hammerstone win that title live from Fatu, given the build and how long Fatu's title reign was and everything. It's a shame that most people are going to find out about this before they get to watch it. It really is. It's a real shame. So MLW, Court Bauer, anyone involved, I love your company. Major League Wrestling rules. One of my favorite companies in the world right now. But y'all got to figure out a way to get these shows out there live for people. Up next, we have VXS Machiavelli, Violence X Suffering. Now, I will say this. I got to keep it real. The production value on this show sucked. And I don't know if that's on, I don't know if that's on the VXS crew. Don't know if it's on Fight TV. No idea. But, excuse me. But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, they had serious technical problems throughout the show. And the camera they had to use for most of it was just not a good camera. So, like, the production value sucked on this show. There's no better way of putting it. But the matches were great. And I'm going to give you the results. But here's a great example, right? I believe Eli Everfly defeated Starboy Charlie, but I don't know for sure because the feed cut out before the match ended. But Eli Everfly was firmly in control when the feed cut out. And I think they mentioned Eli won on commentary, but I can't remember. So it's hard to really know. But that's real sad. Eli Everfly and Starboy Charlie, two of your really young, hot prospects in the world of indie wrestling. And the finish of their match got cut off by technical issues. Not a good look. After that, we had Kevin Blackwood over Adrian Quest, got the win with a double foot stomp when Kevin Blackwood did the double foot stomp off the top rope while Quest was standing and, like, went kind of right through him into the ground. Really good stuff there. We had Delilah Doom over Brandon Gaskin, Greg Sharp, Gabriel Sky, Super Panda, Slice Boogie, and Matt Vandegrift. The finish was a top rope victory roll from Delilah Doom onto Gabriel Sky, I believe. What really nice. I've seen Delilah do that move before. They're both kind of sitting on the top rope, and then they do, like, the front roll into a victory roll for the pin. Almost like a victory roll bomb. Really good finish there. We had JTG over Chris Bay. Got the one with a running razor's edge into a neck breaker. Really great idea for a finishing move. It looked a little scuffed when he hit it, but I'm a huge fan of JTG. I'm a huge fan of Chris Bay. Love the matchup, and I love the finish, especially in theory. Like, it's a sick move. But you just gotta hit it right. Just didn't come across great at the end. But that said, the actual match was great. The match itself was great. I'm a huge fan of both guys. After that, we had another. This match was probably my favorite match of the night. Either that or the next match I'm going to talk about. But we had Brian Cage over Alex Zane and Willie Mack in a three-way. Brian Cage got the win after hitting a drill claw on Willie Mack. You know, y'all know how I feel about Willie Mack. We'll talk about him during Impact in a second, but I'm on the side of, like, I constantly say Willie Mack should have already been the Impact World Champion by now, and they got to really just build him to a spot like that. It looks like he'll probably get the X Division title again sometime soon, but Willie Mack is a freaking star, and Alex Zane is killing it. He is benefiting huge from getting, you know, released by the WWE this year. He's already the number one contender for the Ring of Honor World Championship. He's popped up at Impact. I'm sure he'll pop up at AEW soon enough. I mean, he is going to be everywhere, and he's killing it on the indies again. Huge fan of the sauce, Alex Zane. And, of course, Brian Cage we see often on AEW television. Whether him and his wife are happy with his booking or not is, you know, up for debate. But Brian Cage is an interesting guy, right? He's like this muscle man monster that moves like a cruiserweight. Very, very fun to watch. The next match, like I said, probably my favorite match of the night. We had Jordan Oliver over Rocky Romero, got the one with the clout cutter. This match ruled. I mean, if you want to see what Jordan Oliver is all about, watch this. And Rocky Romero made Jordan look amazing, which was the goal, in my opinion. Rocky, obviously, a great talent in his own right. But at this point in his career, I think it's really more about making the next generation look better and setting them up for success. And that's exactly what I got out of this match with Jordan Oliver and Rocky Romero. This was awesome. This is one of my favorite Jordan Oliver matches, and I'm a big fan of Jordan. And, you know, his favorite match overall for me is probably him and Tony Deppen in the Iron Man match because it was so long. But a close second, honestly, probably my favorite match he's done is probably the Davey Richards match, probably. But this was way up there on that list. A huge, huge win for Jordan, and huge shout out to Rocky Romero for you know, really helping establish Jordan even more. Then the main event of the show, Robbie Eagles defeated Jimmy Lloyd, got the win with the Ron Miller special, which is like a kind of like a tweaked figure four leg lock, Indian death lock type thing. That was Jimmy Lloyd's first loss in VXS. He was the only undefeated wrestler left in VXS coming into that. And after the match, Jordan Oliver comes out and beats down Jimmy Lloyd because Jimmy Lloyd actually used the clout cutter during the match. And Oliver hits his own clout cutter. So they're setting up another big match between Oliver and Jimmy Lloyd. They've been feuding a little bit in VXS. So good stuff there. Great company. Great talent. They just got to figure out the production issues. Moving on, we have Impact Wrestling. This was a really good show of episode of Impact. Speaking of Alex Zane, he kicked off this show. So this one started off with Trey Miguel over Alex Zane and Laredo Kid. Awesome three-way match, in my opinion. The finish came when Trey Miguel hit a Meteora onto Laredo Kid for the 1-2-3. Y'all already know what I'm going to say. This, in a match filled with incredible moves, incredible talent, the lamest move that any of them hit was the Meteora, and that was the finish of the match. I just don't understand people using that as a finisher, especially when, like, Trey Miguel's entire moveset, every move he does is better than the Meteora, and the Meteora is a finisher. I just don't understand it. I just don't get it. The only good Meteora I've seen hit all year was G-Raver hit one to Jimmy Lloyd, and the reason I liked it is because he hit it through, like, glass, barbed wire, fire, chairs. Like, he hit it through this, like, cocktail of just deathmatch stuff, so it looked brutal. But outside of that, I never liked the Meteora. For the newer listeners, the reason being, it looks like it wouldn't hurt. It looks like it would hurt the person doing it more than the person receiving it. Because the person doing it is going to land on their kneecaps and then face plant, and their opponent's just going to roll onto their back. It's basically like doing it just doesn't look like it would hurt at all, like a pillow fall. After that, we had The Influence defeating the team of Jordan Grace and Rachel Ellering. Got the finish with, I guess, a double stroke, Jeff Jarrett's old move, but two of them hitting it at once. I mean, the match was all right, but once again, you already know what I'm going to say if you listen to this show. I do not understand why they're having Jordan Grace and Rachel Ellering lose matches like this. Both of them, like, Deonna Purrazzo is established as a world champion, the Knockouts champion. That's totally fine. Deonna's killing it. That's great. But if Jordan and Rachel aren't going to be the ones in that spot, because both of them could be, like, those are the three for me in Impact that stand above all the others, are Deonna, Jordan, and Rachel. If Jordan and Rachel aren't going to be in the world title mix right now. They should be beating everybody in tag team matches. Like, they should be completely unstoppable in a tag team. And the influence being them, I just don't really like. I missed it, but earlier in the show, there was a good video package from the former Aiden English, a good promo, trying to get people to really care about him and Impact. We also had footage of Sami Callihan being taken to the hospital because he was attacked by Morrissey and Moose. And there's going to be, I think it was, yeah, Edwards versus Morrissey was the main event of the show. So Eddie Edwards is basically vowing to get revenge on Morrissey and Moose, you know, while Callihan is out with injury. We had a great interview from Christopher Daniels. I love seeing the Fallen Angel back. We had, there was like a fight in Mickey James's barn between Deonna Purrazzo and Mickey James. They're just building more and more to the Knockouts title match between Purrazzo and James. I will say this, James is looking amazing. She really is. Like, as far as, like, you know, she looks like she can wrestle as good as she ever has. She looks physically like she's in the best shape of her life. So, like, I'm really looking forward to the match, but I really think Deonna needs to retain. I really think you need to just keep establishing her as really the centerpiece of the Knockouts division, especially if the Forbidden Door, you know, she needs to get involved with that. Like, we need to get Deonna Purrazzo versus Britt Baker at some point. We have to, especially because Deonna's belt collecting. Like, she got the AAA title, too. Like, yeah, I feel like you got to put Deonna over Mickey, but I think the match is going to be way better than kind of what I expected a few weeks ago. After that, we had the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels, over Madman Fulton. Got the win with the best moonsault ever. Really good stuff. Just great to see Christopher Daniels back as the Fallen Angel and back in Impact Wrestling. He means so much to that company, and it's just really cool to see him do it. And this is a huge benefit of the Forbidden Door. Just the fact that, you know, he's kind of lost in the mix in AEW, and he needs to rebuild himself as a singles guy. And he has the platform of going to Impact Wrestling to rebuild. And then when he comes back to AEW, he'll be kind of more reestablished again as the Fallen Angel. And it'll only help him in AEW going forward. So I love all this. We find out next week there's going to be a tag match between Christian Cage and Josh Alexander versus Ace Austin and Madman Fulton next week. That'll be really, really good. We had a segment with Violent by Design, who... I missed it last week. Joel Pearl made sure to remind me, and I'll mention it here, and obviously I would have remembered by now because of this segment, but we have a segment where Violent by Design is in the ring. They're basically saying, you know, Rhino, you're either with us or against us. Heath Slater comes out. Violent by Design retreats. Heath goes for a hug to Rhino, but Rhino leaves the ring. That's really, you know, I was saying last week, why would they turn on Rhino? But of course they did, because, you know, Heath Slater's back, or Heath Miller, I should say, or Heath, whatever they're calling him. But this is clearly leading to Heath and Rhino reuniting as a tag team and taking on Violent by Design, which I'm sure will be really good, although I really enjoyed Rhino in Violent by Design. I really did. We had the announcement of a digital media championship. I had a buddy of mine that I will remain unnamed. He was there live with Impact tapings. He gave me a bunch of spoilers the night of the show. And this is one of the things that that he told me about, and I was like, what all did they say about the digital media championship? And all he said was, I think it's like a social media type thing. And that's really what it just kind of came down to. They're going to crown the champion at Bound for Glory is what it sounds like. And the main event of the show, this was a really damn good hardcore match. As you would expect for Eddie Edwards, you know, he really thrives in these kind of scenarios. But Eddie Edwards defeated W. Morrissey. Got the win with a Boston Knee Party while Alicia Edwards was holding a steel chair that was covered in barbed wire. So Edwards, you know, kneed the barbed wire chair into the face of Morrissey. So, like, if Morrissey's going to lose matches, I mean, this is the way to do it. You know, barbed wire, chair, knee to the head. I mean, I don't love Morrissey losing as often as he has lately, because I think they could have really created an outlier with him, like an unstoppable wrestler out of him. But I don't know how long he's going to be an Impact for. I keep hearing it's not going to be too much longer. So I guess they're going to just do whatever they can to have him make other people look good on his way out. It's just the feeling I get. After the match, Moose attacked Eddie Edwards and Alicia. And then he
spears Eddie through a table, and basically he puts a chair on his neck and he throws him into the ring post and hits him with another chair. It was brutal. It was really brutal. And I love that out of Moose. Like, please just get Moose back in a position where he can be the world champion. Like, they did such a good job building him last year, and he's kind of treading water right now in the upper mid card. But if this, I'm assuming this will lead to like a big Moose versus Eddie Edwards match. And I really hope Moose wins, and I hope he wins clean, but I have to assume Edwards will probably win this feud at the end of the day, because he's Impact's dude. He just is. So that was Impact, but it was a really good episode this week. Highly recommended. Up next, we have results for NXT UK. Show started off with Mustache Mountain. Jeez. Mustache Mountain over Oliver Carter and Ashton Smith. Got the win with the rebound lariat Snapdragon suplex combo. What can I say about, you know, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven that hasn't been said already? These guys just absolutely rule. Tyler Bate especially. Tyler Bate, if you look at everyone signed to WWE right now across all of their brands, Tyler Bate honestly might be the most talented guy outside. I mean, Roman Reigns is kind of in his own world right now, but Tyler Bate might be the most overall, you know, just best overall talent you have in the entire company. And, you know, he's the Heritage Cup champion, which is great, but I feel like this guy should be wrestling in front of, you know, millions of viewers instead of the few people who watch NXT UK. I mean, the guy just ultra talented, and he's still super young. I mean, Tyler Bate is the man. But it's a really solid tag team match to open the show up. And, you know, the kind of stuff you'd expect out of Mustache Mountain, just an incredible tag team. And I love seeing Tyler Bate do the stuff he does, like where he does like the suplexes where he's like up on the ropes and like picks people up, and just the feats of strength for strength for a guy his size, and the way him and Trent Seven work together. They just work so seamlessly. It's just great stuff to watch. After that, we had Danny Luna over Zaya Brookside. The finish was a fireman's carry into a set out powerbomb by Luna. Really good looking move. After the match, Blair Davenport had a promo, and Stevie Turner went to talk to Sid Scala, wants to get Davenport reinstated because she wants a match. We had Mark Andrews attack Sam Gradwell with a skateboard. This is based on the feud that they've been having, and Gradwell defacing the artwork mural that why am I blanking on their name? Subculture had put together, or had spray painted. After that, we had Charlie Dempsey over Josh Morrell. I really, really liked what I saw out of Charlie Dempsey. I don't know what this move is called, the submission move. He had him in like this. He did some really cool, innovative offense and some really cool chain moves together, but like, he had him in a Kimura and then changed the Kimura into like a straight arm bar and then turned it into this like almost like a twister with like the leg trap. I can't even describe it. I've never seen it before, but it looked absolutely brutal. And I love what I saw out of both guys, both Josh Morrell and Charlie Dempsey. Very, very solid talents, both of those guys. Want to see more from both for sure. We get a face-off between Ilya Dragunov, the UK champion, and A-Kid, who's the number one contender. Really looking forward to that matchup. Both those guys rule, but I have to imagine Dragunov's going to have a long run with that title belt. He really deserves it. He's the man right now. Only other thing of importance I would say would be the main event, where Joe Coffey defeats Jordan Devlin. He winds up getting the win with all the bells for the best after the Glasgow send-off for the 1-2-3, and this was all set up by a distraction and some small interference from Gallus. So keeps Devlin looking solid, because Gallus needed to cheat to get this win for Joe Coffey, but then, you know, Coffey does get the win with all the best for the bells. Next week it is Devlin versus Wolfgang, and that was part of the story with this here. Next week is Devlin versus Wolfgang in the finals of the Heritage Cup number one contender tournament. The winner is going to fight Tyler Bate for the trophy. I have to imagine, especially based on this, you know, the story and this match here with the main event, I definitely got to lean Jordan Devlin. So I'm assuming Devlin's going to beat Wolfgang next week to win the tournament. But then I'd imagine Tyler Bate will retain over Devlin when it comes, but that's going to be an awesome, awesome matchup. And like I said, I mean, let me put it this way. If Tyler Bate loses anytime soon, I have to imagine he's coming to, you know, Raw, SmackDown, or NXT. But, like, NXT is, like, a weird place right now because they don't want wrestlers. And then Raw and SmackDown, you know, I feel like that if he was going to have a big career on either of those brands, the time would have come by now already. So he's kind of in this weird no man's land. But I can't say enough good things about Tyler Bate. And I can echo a lot of them about Jordan Devlin. That guy's awesome. So, you know, once again, another really solid episode of NXT UK. And it helped really, really, really good for storyline progression across the brand. The next show we have results for 205 Live. Show started off with Dante Chen over Malik Blade. Got the win with what I guess, I think the commentator called an inside cradle guillotine, like, or sorry, inside cradle guillotine drop. So basically, like, a lifting guillotine into almost like a DDT type looking move. Looked pretty brutal. I've seen the move before, but like, looked pretty brutal. But yeah, Chen with the win over Blade. Solid little match to open the show up. After that, we had Amari Miller over Valentina Ferraz. The finish was a cravat knee. Like, Miller put a standing cravat on Ferraz and then dropped down, like, face first into her knee. Good looking stuff. Both of those matches, fairly short matches, but, you know, just kind of getting the crowd. Honestly, I think it's more about getting the crowd familiar with these talents because they're newer to the 205 Live brand. And then the main event of the show, we had Imperium over the team of Trey Baxter and Ikemen Jiro. The finish was the Imperium Bomb, which for those who don't know, it's basically a doomsday device with a European uppercut. This was a great match. I mean, this lasted the majority of the show. I'm a huge fan of Trey Baxter. Huge fan. I like what Ikemen Jiro brings to the table, especially, you know, I think WWE is a good fit for him because they could really push him as like this kind of fun, colorful character. But Imperium, you know, there they established tag team. I'm not surprised by the result. The match was really, really good. You know, if you don't watch anything else from 205 Live, I would recommend watching Imperium versus Jiro and Baxter. And Baxter's just unreal. I was a huge fan of his as Blake Christian on the Indies. And I hope they figure out a way of doing more with him because I've said it before and I'll say it again. I get really worried when I see people on 205 Live, given the track record of you know, kind of the pattern. It's like, we don't know what to do with you. We'll put you on 205 Live for a while. And then within like 6 months to a year, it seems like they're just not in the company anymore. So I hope that is not the fate for anybody involved, but I especially hope that's not the fate for Trey Baxter because Trey Baxter is just, but here's the thing. If he was to have the same, kind of the same trajectory as like Alex Zane or Anthony Henry or Kurt Stallion or these guys, Trey Baxter would wind up right back on the Indies. He'd get swooped up so fast by AEW or one of the other major brands. And, I mean, he would absolutely kill it. So, you know, there's a silver lining there. But I hope they figure out what to do with him within the WWE, you know, confines. Because, I mean, he's there and he's living his dream. Like, I mean, and he's talented. But you see him and then you also think, like, wonder what they're doing with Ricochet right now. You know what I mean? So, moving on, we have the results for NWA Power. The show started off with Tim Storm. Good promo, him and Aldis. Aldis says he has Tim Storm's back now. I mean, it, very, very clear, you know, unless they pull the rug out from under us, and this is all like a really long way of kind of getting more heat on Nick Aldis. It seems like he's really, you know, leaning into being a babyface at this point, which I think is smart at this point. Molina with a promo on Camille. The first match of the show, we had Hawks Airy, the team of PJ and Luke Hawks, over the team of Colby Carino and JTG. The finish was, I have in my notes, a 3D power slam looking thing. Basically, one of them lifts them up like a 3D, but they come down in a power slam. So, solid match for what it was, though. I like Hawks Airy, and obviously, I'm a big fan of JTG. I talked about that earlier. And I'm a big fan of Colby Carino. You know, he's been doing great. I've liked his work with the Ugly Ducklings on the Indies. Y'all should really seek out Colby Carino versus Steve Carino from a couple weeks back. I wish I could remember the show it happened on, but it was a damn good match. I believe it was on independentwrestling.tv. It was either that or Fight TV. I can't remember. F-I-T-E. We have a promo where Scion says he's going to come after the NWA TV championship. And then the next segment was Austin Idol and their whole squad with, you know, Black G's and Tyrus. And, you know, Tyrus accepts the challenge, but basically says he's going to beat the hell out of him. I think that match is going to suck when it happens. We had Genocide over Allison Kay. The finish was a schoolboy roll-up after distraction from Lady Frost on the outside. I'm a big fan of Lady Frost. I'm a big fan of Genocide and Allison Kay, too. Like, they have really kind of quietly put together a really solid women's division, even after losing, you know, talents like Thunder Rosa. And, you know, Serena Deeb hasn't been involved lately with injury and stuff. But because of the win, Paula Blaze and Genocide get a shot at the NWA women's tag team titles. La Rebellion did a promo where they pretty much talked about how with the Forbidden Door. Now, a lot of it was not in English, so it's kind of hard to understand. But I could hear certain words that led me to believe the majority of the promo was about how they want to fight any tag team in the world. Doesn't matter what company it's from. They want to kick that Forbidden Door open and fight the best tag teams in the world. We had a no contest between Judas and James Storm. This match really didn't even get started. I mean, like, it technically did get started, but pretty much they were fighting in the corner, like, right at the beginning of the match, and the referee just couldn't control the action and threw the match out, so no contest. Just continuing to build that feud and that story. I'll just say this. James Storm deserves so much better. He really does. But at the end of the day, it's kind of on him for, like, continuing to go back to the National Wrestling Alliance when it's just kind of a hope of mine that he'd be involved in, you know, AEW or even Impact again or something. I just feel like he's just kind of in no man's land in NWA right now. And then the main event of the show, DePope and the NWA Heavyweight Champion, World's Heavyweight Champion, Trevor Murdoch, defeated the teams of Jeremiah Plunkett and Crimson, as well as Odinson and Pero. Really solid triple threat tag team match, in my opinion. The finish was an Elijah Express from DePope onto Jeremiah Plunkett for the 1-2-3. But yeah, pretty good episode of NWA this week. I'd say this episode was better than, you know, probably the best episode in like the last month or so, in my opinion. So good stuff. Last set of results we got, two matches for Ring of Honor television. First match we had was a pure rules matchup where Brian Johnson defeated PJ Black. Got the win after getting a thumb to the eye. So Johnson's a thumb to the eye on PJ Black when the ref's not looking. And then the ref's kind of trying to figure things out. While the ref's kind of turned around, Brian Johnson hits the process, which is a reverse neck breaker spun out into a face buster for the 1-2-3. And the only other match of the show, a four corner survival match. That was really good. I mean, stacked with talent here. We had Brody King over Jay Lethal, Kenny King, and Shane Taylor. When I was doing my notes, I had King written down over and over, and I was like, duh, there's two Kings in this match. I'm confusing myself here. But Brody King gets the win. Basically, what winds up happening is Kenny King hits a Blue Thunder Bomb on Shane Taylor, which was really impressive considering Shane Taylor's size. And then Brody winds up hitting a German suplex onto Kenny King to get him out of the way. Jay Lethal's already kind of taken out of the match at this point. And then Brody King hit a really nice lariat onto Shane Taylor for the 1-2-3. So they're really doing a good job of continuing to build Brody King. Like, I really think if I looked at Ring of Honor's overall roster right now, if I had one choice of, like, who do I think should be the next Ring of Honor World Champion, I'd say Jonathan Gresham. But a very close second, and the person I could really see potentially doing it is Brody King. If not, I think Brody King needs a big singles title soon with Ring of Honor, because he's been built better than almost anyone on the show over the past year. So two really solid matches, and, you know, like I always say about Ring of Honor, you know, and I say this about all wrestling, and Ring of Honor kind of exemplifies it. All I want are storylines that make sense and good matches. And Ring of Honor provides that on a weekly basis. So another solid episode of Ring of Honor. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Please shoot me a follow on Twitter at Fight Talk _FIGHTTALK_. Use my code FIGHTTALK, FIGHTTALK, all as one word, no space, on independentwrestling.tv or IWTV.live. Please give me a thumbs up or a like right here on FightSelect.com. I'll be back next weekend. And until then, enjoy some professional wrestling.